I'm going to wrap up an identity series that Dr. Tammy, my lovely wife, spent the last 3 weeks pouring out for us. I'm very thankful for. I'm not going to take a lot of time this morning because we got a lot of baptism. You can see we're double barrel this morning. We're coming hard on baptisms. And so I want to go through this quickly. I'm going to recap her shortly. And I really mostly just want to put a tool in your hand, a little grid that I'm hopeful serves as a dashboard for you, maybe even a framework that you can continue to simply think through with regard to your identity as your days move on. Like when it starts to tilt, when the wheels start to come on, you might be able to, I want to give you something you can return to quickly and realize, oh, this is an identity issue. Let me get that straightened out. That's my hope. Little recap tool. And we'll get to the baptisms because we've got a load of them. Yeah, I think one of the big things to mention right off the bat is that identity is a puzzle. It is challenging to get a grip on it. If I were to ask you individually who you are, you'd give me, all sorts of different answers to that. And it would the initial things that you talk about are probably the things that are most dominant in your mind and your heart about who you are. You might tell me what you do for a living. You might tell me the relationship that you have with other people. You might be a son, a mother, or whatever. You might tell me about some painful past, or you might even tell me about some future event you've got in mind to describe who you are, the things that you've loved and the things that you've done. Very rarely do Christians, and I know not everybody in the room is a Christian, but that's our context this morning. Very rarely when someone asks us who we are, do we say, well, I'm an eternal being who has been restored to God through the work and person of Christ, and it is him that I am trying to emulate in this life. We don't say those sorts of things. But those would be the core of our identity. But it's very hard to stay in touch with who you are. It's difficult to even define what identity is. Philosophers throughout history have defined it in different ways, which is shocking, really, unsettling, that very, very smart people give different answers to what is identity in the first place. I'm going to try a metaphor out here on you. It's like pie, not food, but that infinite number, pie. You ever think about that idea that we can't mathematically determine the circumference of a circle or the area within a circle without using an infinite number? An infinite number. You could actually measure a circle and get the circumference, but you mathematically can't do it exactly. That's kind of crazy to think about. Unless you realize the world was created by God. Therefore, some of the things in the world don't make sense to us. Cannot add up for us. We cannot get our head around it. Of course there are things in this world that literally cannot be measured, that cannot be completely defined with our minds. Identity, like pie, is among those things you could say don't fit in our universe. And that's true. It should be true. A God-centric worldview presumes that we wouldn't understand every single thing in the world, and certain things don't quite fit. And so it might make sense that very, very smart people cannot put their finger on what identity is and how we get it if you don't look beyond this world. It is hard to know and keep hold of who you are. One of my favorite clips about that very question dates me dramatically.
Something is on a spot, right on a wing, with a wing, Come on, will you cut it out?
Can't cut it out. It'll grow right back.
Creepy little monkey. Will you stop following me? Who are you?
The question is, who are you?
I thought I knew. Now I'm not so sure.
Well, I know who you are. Shh, come here. It's a secret.
Enough already. What is that supposed to mean, anyway?
It means you're a baboon, and I'm not.
I think you're a little confused.
Wrong. I'm not the one who's confused. You don't even know who you are.
Oh, and I suppose you know.
Sure do. You're Mufasa's boy. Bye.
You don't even know who you are. That's true. I have to admit it's true for myself. There are times and there are seasons where literally the thought is bouncing around in my head, who are you? Who are you that you would think that or do that or imagine that? Who are you? It's a puzzle. Here's what Tammy said. We have our given soul, we have our crashed soul, and we have our secured soul. Our given soul is we were created on purpose and called. Very good. Genesis 1, Psalm 139, Ephesians 2, on and on. We are God's handiwork. Receive it. Possess it. Stop searching for an identity you already have. Stop letting culture, other people's words tell you who you are. The crashed soul. Why it's so hard to stay in that foundation? Because there's an enemy. There are dark voices. There are other voices, just like in the garden, that lie to us. And the garden lies are still at work. The garden voices are still at work. And when we believe the lie, when we listen to the wrong voices, we start hiding and striving and oftentimes pretending that we're not hiding. You need to renew your mind daily with Scripture. Romans 12 says this is how we resist being conformed to the world. We have a crashed soul. But then we have this opportunity for a secured soul. What does it look like to live fully secure? Well, it means to live in Christ. It looks like putting on what's already true, plus the critical adds of Jesus: adopted, forgiven, freedom, new life, never alone. We're heirs with him. So the secure soul looks like living out that inheritance instead of insecurity. So we surrender our identity to God. We steward it well. We walk in love, generosity, and forgiveness. We live it out. We add soul care to self-care, blessing others out of God who's made you. That's the sort of the sweep of what Tammy has been walking us through. And I want to, like I said, I want to add this tool to your belt, and we'll call it a morning on message and turn to these baptism, right? So this thing, like I said, it's a grid, hopefully to help you stay aware and on track with your God-oriented, gospel-centered identity, if that's where you have put your faith and that's where you're trying to live. It's a dashboard of sorts. Wouldn't that be nice if you actually had that? Wouldn't it be nice if you had a heads-up display and you could have a warning light go off when you were starting to grab your identity from the wrong place? Because we often don't know it right away. And we end up down this path and it's hard to recover from quite often. But this, hopefully, I'm creating a little bit of a dashboard for you. As I was thinking this through, hey, wait, you're letting the cat out of the bag already. Hold off there, CGI, which these people are the unthanked heroes of this church right back here, constantly working the lights and the sound and all that. Thank you, guys. I just want to hold a second for that. As I was thinking this through and trying myself to try to add some definition to what identity is, I realized one of the things that was either forgetting or was tripping me up was that the Christian identity actually has more to do with the future than it does with the past, and a worldly identity has more to do with the past than it does with the future. There's something that we have been given, a seed that has been planted that is going to grow into something and is intended to grow in that direction and will grow in that direction if we steward it well. We're growing into something that is really already within us, where the world tends to look back and becomes the result of all the things that have happened before us. And I started thinking about, oh, but there are things in the past that are part of our identity that God has either implemented or allowed or orchestrated. and there are things going on right now. So I started thinking about identity in three tenses: past, present, future. And then I started thinking about how does past identity work from a worldly perspective, and how does it work from a gospel perspective or a gospel center or a God-centric vision? And so that's the chart I'm about to show you. We can show. It shows past, present, future, world-constrained identity. You can throw it up there now. And then gospel-centered. And I want to just work through this with you. It's not the whole story, but it helps get our arms around something that we sometimes overcomplicate, which I really wanted to do. If I would have been given three more days, this would have been like a whole spreadsheet of complicated thoughts. I'm trying to keep it simple. Identity always has a past, it always has a present, always has a future. I also want to add that there's a story arc going on, and obviously a gospel-centric Christian worldview is going to have something to do with Jesus, if not everything to do with Jesus, and I want to mention that in as simple form as I can too. If you get the weekly update, I'm going to put this chart in the weekly update so you can have it if it's difficult for you to take notes on that. So here we go. The world constrained versus the gospel-centered identity of our past is circumstantial versus providential. Circumstantial identity, shaped by accidents, wounds, regrets, chance, things that happen to you, or even things that you have done that have consequences in your own life. And not necessarily negative, also positive things. But it's all contained by what has happened in our past, happened to you or happened by you. The writer of Ecclesiastes says, I have seen something under the sun, seen something on this earth, that the race is not to the swift or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise or wealth to the brilliant or favor to the learned. There's no rhyme or reason to it, he says, but time and chance happen to all of them. And without a gospel-centered identity, without a providential identity, without a God-given identity, we are subject to the time and the chance things that happen to us. The world's view of identity is by and large something that is inflicted upon you and affects you from what has occurred. We carry around then the weight of all of our past. Again, good or bad, they all come with weight. It gets heavy, it gets hard to shake, and it becomes disproportionately responsible for defining us. Are you with me? Providential is an identity that's rooted not in the circumstances of the past, but in a declaration, in something that was given in the past, before you were even born. The Old Testament says, I formed you in the womb. I knew you before you were born. I set you apart. I appointed you. Paul, working through the identity issues himself, says in the book of Galatians, I was advancing in Judaism beyond many of my own age among my people and was extremely zealous for the traditions of my fathers. You can hear his identity rooted almost exclusively in his past. But when God, who set me apart from my mother's womb and called me by his grace, was pleased to reveal his son in me so that I might preach him among the Gentiles, my immediate response was not to consult any human being. He realized he needed to start getting his identity from God. It needs to be providential. The gospel says something different than what the world says. It says your past identity is given to you from God. Your identity doesn't begin with your context or what you did or what was done to you. It begins with what God has declared about you. Are you with me? If your identity is being formed by your circumstances, then you can feel that, right? You can feel that in your day, in your morning, in your week, in your thoughts. You can feel the things of this life getting a grip on you and telling you who you are. And you're constrained by that if you don't have a providential identity to turn to. We turn to God. Okay, what about the present day? Again, this is not comprehensive. These are just some things that get you in the right framework. By and large, without God, your present life is manipulated. It's pushed and it's pulled by culture, comparison, performance. It's fragile and it's exhausting. Paul says, don't conform to the pattern of this world. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good and perfect and pleasing will. It's insidious. The scariest thing I see is people that are being manipulated by the culture, being told lies about who they are, living it out, and not being able to see that it's happening. The message from this world, throughout every marketing, you know, initiative, nearly every social media, push, is this message: be true to yourself, and we will tell you what that is. Right? Be true to yourself. Here's what you should be. Be true to yourself, and you're not like this. You're going to get kicked out. Be true to yourself like this. That's the message of the world. So we curate, we polish the version of ourselves we want others to see, but it is exhausting, and it's never quite real, and we know it. It's very fragile. You have to hang on to it feverishly because it's going to leave. It's going to break. So the world-constrained identity is one that's circumstantial, and it's one that is manipulated. The gospel-centered identity is one that's providential and that is embattled. What do I mean by that? Yeah, you are given an identity, and now it is our responsibility to steward and see that identity flourish and rise and become all that is intended to become. But it isn't easy. There are other voices. There are weeds. There are challenges and obstacles. But God tells us those things are necessary as a part of your identity development. You cannot be surprised by the trouble, Peter says. Jesus says it's going to come your way. There's deep purpose to it. Life is a battle. It's either a battle to hang on to some circumstantial, manipulated identity, or it's a battle to allow the seed of identity that God has put in each one of us to grow and flourish and to become what it was intended to become. It's embattled. Paul says, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers and authorities and against the powers of this dark world and against the spiritual forces of evil. The gospel says our present identity is embattled. It doesn't mean it's fragile. It means it's contested. Like Tammy said, there are voices, wrong voices, lying voices, that would love very much for you to capitulate and take the identity of something that is not yours to take hold of. So our identity is fought over. It's not up for grabs. It's being matured in the struggle. The fight itself is part of what brings about the identity that you have been given. Are you with me? A very smart person, a friend of ours, it's been a part of our residency program over the years, Bible scholar, Hebrew, Greek, the whole nine yards, sitting in awe of this person, said basically what Paul is saying in almost all of his letters through and through are this: be who you are. Be who you are. Understand who God said you are and live like it. Be and become who you're intended to be and become. So let me take a quick pause here between the present and the future. This oftentimes beautiful, wonderful, loving world that we live in is peppered and frequently riddled with violence. If I went through a quick record of all the violence that has happened in the last just a few months, you would quickly become overwhelmed. Just in the last few months, do you know about this airstrike in Myanmar? Two military aircraft airstrike, two private schools, 18 people, 18 students killed. Mass killings in Haiti, way too frequent. A young people's protest in Nepal over a social media ban ended in 72 deaths. Closer to home, Speaker of the House in Minnesota and her husband, both killed in a politically motivated home invasion. You remember the gunfire outside the Capitol Jewish Museum a while back left staff members dead. Boulder, Colorado, is supposed to be a peaceful solidarity work, turned into a firebomb. An elderly woman died later. In July, that Midtown Manhattan shooting, four people dead. This week, Charlie Kirk, shot, killed. When identity is only from our circumstantial past, and our present identity is manipulated, where there is no providence, no future, no hope to secure the embattled self, it collapses into violence almost every time. Fear, insecurity, rage of being constrained and told who you are, and there's something internal that says, no, that's not who I am, but no one's telling you who you are, no one's giving you the greater picture. They just keep taking advantage of your manipulating and turning you into something that you really don't want to be. It turns violent because you're trapped inside your circumstances and the manipulated identity this culture is forcing on you. And the target becomes whoever's closest to whoever symbolizes the thing you most fear. And this is going to go on with tragic frequency for as long as people have no foundation and no future beyond what this world can offer, because without it, it's just hopeless darkness in the heart, suppressing the identity, the image of God that is intended to become all that he hoped. God, would just pray for our nation and the world, that the spaces where the fears and the insecurities are coddled, we don't deal with the middle, the underlying causes of all of this stuff, and we keep trying to fix it superficially, and it's not going to work. God, would you just come? Would you break in? Would you speak? Would your voice be heard by those who are lost and confused? Draw them to yourself. Remind them who they are. Bring them into good churches, grace and mercy and patience. God, would we be a church where people could just come and begin to understand who they are and be around people who are trying to figure it out that haven't arrived? God, you heal our nation. Would you heal our world? Would you start by healing our own hearts? Not letting us be confused about who we are, in Jesus' name. Okay, the future, as you might imagine, is very simple. You're either distorted, you end up with a distorted view of yourself, or a perfected view of yourself, a perfected self, right? You're going to just get worse and worse if you're just completely identified by circumstance and manipulation. But you're going to be perfected, Paul says, confident that he who began a good work and you will carry it on to completion until the day of Jesus Christ. I'm going to be very simple on these last few. Right, the story arc. You're either in an arc of a story that's mostly about you or your tribe in this world, or you're inside of a story that is transcendent. It is outside of this, and you are swept up into God's greater story of the universe and the cosmos and the world. So you're either caught in this egocentric story arc, or you're in a transcendent one, and God invites you into the one that he is telling. He is before all things, Paul says, and in all things hold together in him. So always remember that. Continue to learn that story. Be a part of that story. Hear about that story. Think about it. Talk about it. Pray about it with others what God's doing in their lives in the big arc. Read the Bible and look for that arc. And then finally, you have Jesus sitting at the center of the whole thing. and the world sees him as a stumbling block. He's not understandable. How is it possibly that someone with that much power could lay it down and call that power? How could it possibly be true that dying is the key to living, right? It makes no sense. He's a scandalon, a stumbling block. But for the believer, he's a cornerstone, the foundation that holds everything together. The perfect example, the picture of a life fully lived in the given identity of God. The place of restoration, the place of strength. Through him, all things were made. The cornerstone of peace. Paul says, for he himself is our peace. He made the two groups one, destroyed the barrier, dividing walls of hostility. He is the resurrection and he is the life. So I want that to be helpful to you. Look at that grid, check it out. Just remember, this is that world column is what's going to be hitting you in the face every day, and we need to live out of that other space. So hopefully it's a tool. All right. Baptism, how does that relate? Hopefully, you don't have to stretch your imagination very far to see how this relates to baptism. When we baptize somebody, when you were baptized, whether you know it or not, this is what you said. My identity and my future are in God's hands. I am who the Father says I am. By faith, my corrupted thoughts and my actions are absolved in Jesus, and the Spirit will lead me through the battle to my destiny, a future perfection and a peace with him forever. Are you with me? So here they come. Feels a little strange doing baptism, right? It's only the church that does it. Didn't used to be that way. In the first century, Greeks and Romans and Jews alike baptized people to show a new allegiance. And that's what's going on. These people are all going to be staying this morning where their allegiance now is. So let me invite Pastor Brian up here. The master of ceremonies is going to go through the process with us.